Welcome to the Taiwanese Diaspora Podcast, where we use personal storytelling to connect people of Taiwanese heritage from all around the world. I am Cynthia, and I'm excited to use this podcast platform as a way to explore what it means to be Taiwanese X. This is episode 36. This episode is bilingual in Mandarin Chinese and English. I'm really excited to welcome Grace to the show today. She is the daughter of a retired Taiwanese diplomat, so she'll tell us about the adventures of growing up in different countries around the world and learning different languages and the travels that she got to do. She currently lives in New York, and you will hear us talk about podcasting because Grace had expressed some interest in doing one. And I'm really excited to announce that she recently launched. It's called Stories from a Nomadic Citizen. So please go check it out.
大家好，欢迎收听台湾人网络广播，我是阿秀，用这个平台来跟华侨华裔的台湾人聊他们的生活过程和未来的梦想。
这是第36集，我们今天聊的是用国语跟英文。今天很高兴欢迎到 Grace 来到这个节目，我们是美国感恩节之后聊。她是一位台湾外交官的女儿，所以在不同国家长大，也会讲好几个语言，现在住在纽约。今天会听到我们在聊 podcast， 她有兴趣开始自己的，然后最近有 go live， 她的 podcast 是叫 Stories from a Nomadic Citizen， 欢迎大家收听。
Awesome, so thanks for reaching out.
Do you work full time and then you do this podcast on the side?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that is challenging.I've had the thought of like starting kind of more like a diary setup of a podcast
for
a while. And then it's been like half a year and I recorded the first episode and I just haven't done anything with it. So I like props to you, you know, for fitting it in with, you know, a full-time job.
Oh, thanks. Well, I still encourage you to do it. And something that, you know, like you read all the blogs that are like, well, you need to make sure your podcast is consistent and you're putting material out, blah, blah, blah. But like, it doesn't have to be consistent as long as you get it out. And it's like, whatever you're good with, if that like lessens the pressure.
Yeah. I think once, you know, the first one is out, then I think it'll be a bit easier.
Yeah. What topic are you interested in?
Well, I'm actually like, related to sort of identity and being like nomadic, third culture, but not really focusing just on that. I think it's more of just like diaries from someone like myself. So actually the first episode I recorded was about running. So it's not anything really related to directly pertaining to identity and sense of belonging. But I talked about running just because it's something that makes me feel like I belong in the community and motivates me, and also has made me feel more connected to New York City as a place.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, it does tie into it, but less directly.
Cool. Before COVID and stuff, did you take part in the like run the 9 races so you can run in the New York Marathon?
Yeah, I did. So I actually ran the New York City Marathon last year.
Cool.
And yeah, that was an amazing experience. So I did the 9+1 through the New York Roadrunners the year before. So that got me the guaranteed entry for the 2019 Marathon.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Really, really grateful that I was able to do it last year, because obviously this year, it's nothing is happening.
Yeah.
In that sense.
What other marathons have you done? I've done 3 and then I got injured doing something else. But I'm looking for like race inspiration.
Yeah.
Because everyone's always like, oh, have you run the Boston? I'm like, no, you have to qualify for Boston.
Yeah. No, it's tough. Or you just have to raise a lot of money through the charities. But no, I've only done the New York City Marathon, and I actually got injured a few weeks before the marathon during training. And I still did it. I didn't run like to my full capability, but yeah, I mean, obviously there's like, you know, the 6, the majors, right? The Abbott majors, those 6 big marathons. No, I did mainly just like the ones in New York City, the other like half marathons and shorter ones. But right now I don't even know like what I could do like half marathon distance again, because I have a hip injury. So yeah, we'll see. But I love running and racing, the adrenaline.
That's awesome. The first 2 marathons I did were smaller, and I think I like those better, because I did Chicago before I got injured back in like 2018, I guess, was the last one. And I was just like, there's too many people.
Yeah, I loved it. I guess, like, to me, it's like New York City is just full of people anyway.
Yeah, that's true. How's COVID in New York?
Yeah, I mean, right now, indoor dining is still allowed. I'm actually planning on meeting a friend later today to do outdoor dining, even though the real field temperature is like 28 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
Which is scary. But yeah, everything is still open. And yeah, I mean, I would say like there's still like the holiday atmosphere and spirit.
Okay.
All the decorations are up. So
cool. Okay. So let's get started. I mean, you've lived everywhere. So what languages do you want to talk in today?
Well, I can do English and Mandarin, but my Mandarin, to be honest, is as someone who's actually attended local school in Taiwan in first to fourth grade, and I've lived in Taiwan longer, it's really not that great. But I would say, yeah, my English is definitely more fluent, okay. But I could do both.
Okay. All right. So like, let's start with a standard introduction then, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. All right. So my name is Grace Cho, and I'm currently based in New York. My parents are from Taiwan. I am from Taiwan, Taiwanese citizen, but I was born in South Africa. So I'm actually also South African citizen. And I moved around a lot because my dad used to be a diplomat for Taiwan. He's now retired, and my parents both are living in Taiwan now. And in terms of sort of life trajectory, where I've lived in South Africa, then Brazil, a little bit in the US, then to Taiwan. That was when I attended elementary school, first grade to fourth grade, then back to Brazil, then to Portugal. That was around middle school, back to Taiwan to finish my last 2.5 years of high school in Hsinchu. Then I very fortunately got a scholarship to go to George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and then have been living in New York for the most part since. I also did a year abroad during university in Spain. So a lot of moving around. In Chinese, so 我是周继凡,我是台湾人,但是我常搬来搬去,所以其实我中文不是讲很流利。不过我爸妈现在都住台湾,然后我以前小学的时候有在台湾念书,不过就是常 在国外长大，我是在南非出生的，那时候我爸在南非，是在，就是替台湾的外交部工作，后来也有搬到巴西，也在美国马州住一小阵子，然后回台湾，那时候其实小学一年级到四年级是我第一次真正住在台湾，学中文，后来五年级时候搬回巴西，那时候 就在美国学校念了几年，然后搬到葡萄牙，也是在美国学校。后来最后回到台湾，念完高中是在新竹的实验中学双语部，之后大学是在美国的华盛顿 D.C. 念完。那时候其中一年也有在西班牙留学一年，之后呢大部分是在纽约工作，不过中间也有差不多一年半在台湾工作，所以就是真的是搬来搬去的。 这四年半前都没有在搬家，所以比较不太一样，但是对啊，整个生活都是常常搬家，就感觉就是不知道是会在哪里定居就是了。那你觉得这几年没有搬家，有没有觉得很奇怪？就是有没有很想要出国？对，是有点奇怪，所以我是有打算，就是明年会搬到别的地方，这个打算。 对，就是我其实是想要希望定居一个地方，但是就是感觉不知道哪里是对的，感觉是对的地方。然后，但同一时间，我好像也不想要就是 commit 到一个地方，有点像就是 mixed feelings 的感觉，就是我想定居一个地方，但是我不知道，然后我也不想要被绑住，类似那样的感觉。
What continent do you want to start on today?
I mean, I guess chronologically, it could make sense to start in Africa, but because I lived in South Africa for the first 8 months of my life only, frankly speaking, I know very little about it, considering that I am a South African passport holder, which I sort of feel like I'm a fake South African. But yeah, it depends on what we want to talk about.
So I guess like one cool thing would be the Taiwanese communities in the different places you lived. I've heard that there are at least some Kujia Tuan in Brazil.
Yeah.
But I don't really know about the other places. And I know there's like a Cojatuan in like Madrid, Spain, because I had lunch with them when I lived in Spain for 6 months.
Most of the places that my dad was posted to had quite a large Taiwanese community. In South Africa, I know there's a period of time before we went there, which was in the late 80s to early 90s, there was sort of a wave of immigration. Same with Brazil. There was just a period of time. I can't remember exactly which decades, but there was sort of like a scheme, and then a lot of Taiwanese and other Asian nationals immigrated there. So in South Africa, again, this is not something I remember. This is something my parents have told me there, but there were always a lot of luncheons and dinners with the local communities. And at the time, it was a very interesting time when my dad was there, because Taiwan had formal diplomatic relations with South Africa. And so the relationship was obviously much closer than it is now, because there's no longer formal diplomatic ties, like with most countries in the world. So when we were there, it was much sort of, I guess, more special treatment for my family. And I know my parents got to meet some really big names, important people. I know that Desmond Tutu came to our house. Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And I know that my dad had met the former president, de Klerk, I believe that's his name. So yeah, it was, I think, out of all the places that my parents were like lived in through my dad's work, that was the most memorable time for my parents, because of just the connections they were able to make and also connecting with the local community. I know my mom, who, you know, wasn't working, she had to give up her job to be able to essentially travel around with my dad. She was able to make friends with local Taiwanese community. And I know she had taken flower lessons from someone who had immigrated to South Africa. Same with my brother and sister, who are a lot older than me. They were attending secondary school then already. And there were definitely other Taiwanese there. I would say, unfortunately, many of them have left. In terms of now compared to then, it's a lot less safe. And crime rates have gotten pretty high. And I think, unfortunately, sort of Asians might be targeted a little more, not because of necessarily racism, but perhaps just, you know, the assumption that they have more wealth. So I know, people have left, but I also know that there's been a lot of people who've actually, those with Taiwanese roots, who've been elected, not a lot, but I know there are some who've been elected to the South African Parliament, which is, I find, pretty interesting.
That's fascinating. What city were you in?
Cape Town.
Oh, that's really cool. I spent a couple of weeks there doing a school project.
How did you like it?
I don't think I knew what to expect. And so we were working at a rural hospital outside of Cape Town. And so we were staying in the city of Cape Town, which is pretty, I would say, like wealthy, fancy feeling. But then the moment you leave kind of basically like this city, the wealth disparity becomes pretty obvious. So there were a lot of gated communities on one side of the street, and then shacks or on the other side.
Townships is, I only went back once in my life. So since I left when I was 8 months old, I've gone back once, and that was in 2010 for the World Cup. Not just the World Cup, but that was an added plus. I do remember that, of course, there is that significant wealth gap, which is also the case in Brazil. And fortunately, I had a nanny who I've still remained in touch with. And when I went back, I stayed with her. And it was sort of a very different experience than, say, if I would have just gone and maybe stayed at an Airbnb. But I'm grateful to still have some sort of connection there.
From there, you went to Brazil?
Yes.
Do you also speak Portuguese?
Yeah, I do, but it's honestly so bad now. It's so rusty. My listening skills are way better. If I you just want me to introduce myself, I could do that. But other than that, it's going to get very grammatically incorrect.
Okay. Well, if you don't mind doing a quick intro.
Yeah. Meu nome é Grace, eu sou de Taiwan, mas morei no Brasil uns 8 anos total, em São Paulo e Brasília, e amo comida brasileira, cultura brasileira, futebol, e espero que possa voltar ao Brasil pronto.
That sounds so pretty. What was that experience like? Because I guess that's a little bit more memorable during your elementary school years, right?
Yeah, I was living in Brazil 2 separate times. So the first stint was in São Paulo. So that's the biggest city in Brazil. And yes, I do have more memories there compared to in South Africa, but still a bit blurry because I left, I think, when I was 5 years old. So it was a period of between roughly 1 to 5 years old. But I have, yeah, certain memories and again pieced together by what my parents have told me. So it's really later on when I went back again during 5th grade to middle of 7th grade where I have much clearer memories of Brazil as a country and my schooling years. And overall I have, yeah, great connection and just very positive image of Brazil as a whole in terms of its people. It's also a very diverse country and has actually quite a large Asian population. I think what's interesting, especially for someone who's perhaps Asian American here, I think it's more common in the US when to be sort of assumed that you're Chinese versus other like Japanese, Korean. Whereas in Brazil, you're almost always assumed to be Japanese, you know, when non-Asians approach you, just because Brazil actually has the largest Japanese diaspora outside of Japan. So that's very interesting experience. And it's just overall a very welcoming place. And it's a very stark contrast, I think, in terms of culture, the way people interact with one another, especially people who don't know one another compared to Taiwan, because it's just in terms of, I think, the level of friendliness. Not saying that Taiwanese are not friendly. I think it's just a different kind of warmth and sort of curiosity amongst Brazilians. But also the love for soccer and like dancing and just partying. But, you know, not partying like sort of the image you get in the U.S., but just mass sort of city level, country level parties with the carnival festivals. So I think in a way, like what I'm saying can sound very sort of kind of a generalization and stereotype, but yes, there's definitely sort of downsides living in Brazil and with current Brazilian government administration, but overall I had an amazing experience there and overall just really actually miss it because I haven't been there since 2005.
So what's it like moving after just a couple of years, like when you're in probably like the peak of like making friends at school and then having to just like peace out and leave? Is it common within the community that you had at school, because you did go to an international school, that most people would probably not be stationary for too long?
It is pretty transient, so people come and go. Every time I had to leave somewhere, it was really sad and I was distraught, feeling like it was the end of the world. I remember when I had to leave Taiwan to go to Brazil, at that time I had forgotten English pretty much, since I did go to school in Massachusetts for a little bit before I went to Taiwan for first grade. But then by that point I was fluent in Mandarin and Chinese. And so then I had to go to Brazil, attend an American school and take ESL classes. So that again was just a sort of an adjustment period. And obviously missed my friends back in Taiwan. Then after a few years, my Chinese had gotten a lot worse and my English was all good and was picking up Portuguese a bit again. And then it was about time to leave once more to go to Portugal. And again, I was feeling very distraught. And I think, yeah, when I went to Portugal, I was telling my mom, I think I'm depressed. You know, just being overly dramatic as a near teenager. But obviously at the time I didn't realize, oh, the only reason I wouldn't have been in Brazil in the first place if it wasn't for my dad's job. So here I am feeling sad that I have to leave Brazil to go to Portugal. But the counterpart is I would have never even have come to Brazil. I would have just stayed in Taiwan. And so obviously looking back now, that's something I'm really grateful for to have experienced, but it's definitely not ideal to have to leave your school when you're a kid, when you're a teenager, especially in the middle of the school year, which happened 3 times for me. It's not something that we can really control. It's kind of up to the government. So it's sometimes, yeah, very short notice as well.
So do they give you a semester heads up, or is it literally just pack your bags, it's like time to go?
What I remember the most is when I left Brazil for Portugal, and that was a shorter heads up for some reason. I think it was like maybe 3 months, which, yeah, I guess, you know, seems enough time, but for me it seemed, you know, very, very abrupt, because I was expecting to finish my school year, which at that point, I was the middle of eighth grade, and I was expecting to finish eighth grade in Brazil, but I didn't. But I think it depends on sort of what level in the foreign ministry you're in and where you're going to. So there's a lot of factors in play in terms of how much advance notice there is. With the very last stint, when my dad left Portugal to come back to Taiwan, that was a little different because my dad hit the retirement age. So in a way it was, okay, you have to retire. And my mom stayed on with me a little bit longer to allow me to at least finish the semester. Otherwise I would have had to leave, like, not just in the middle of the school year, but in the middle of the semester, which obviously is not ideal.
Okay, so now we're in Portugal. I'm guessing Lisbon, probably?
Yeah.
Is the embassy culture different in the different places you've lived? I guess, like, do you interact more with, like, the Taiwanese embassy folks, or do you interact more with other embassy kids and families?
Definitely more other embassy kids just through school, because rarely were there other Taiwanese kids around my age who were attending school with me. To be honest, the official name is not an embassy. We can't call them an embassy unless it's about, you know,
a nice country.
Dozen or countries or so. They're not that big. In Brasilia, that would have been the equivalent of the embassy, because that is the capital of Brazil. I remember, again, Brasilia is a very weird place because it was built sort of kind of similar to DC in terms of it was built to be a capital, and it was sort of like planned very structurally, artificially. So there aren't really that many buildings, skyscrapers congregated in one area. It's very spread out. But I just remember with the equivalent of the embassy, which is typically called the Taipei Economic and Cultural Representative Office.
Yeah, I should have not called it embassy. Or at least in the American English. So 代表处不是大使馆.
Yeah, I would love to call it embassy, but yeah, the official name is not.
Anyway.
Yeah, the office is kind of like in a house compound. So it almost seems like it's just a residential compound, but it's in fact an office, which I think was actually the case with many other embassies. With the Lisbon consulate equivalent, it was more so like an office. But the truth is I don't actually remember these places that much, because I rarely went into the office. Yeah, I spent much more time obviously in school and interacting with other students who, yes, oftentimes their parents also worked as diplomats, and that in a way kind of helped strengthen some of my parents' relationships with other countries' diplomatic representatives, because I was friends with their kids.
Portugal and Brazil, business language is Portuguese. Is that right?
Yeah.
So would you say culturally there are similarities when you were living there? Like, was it an easy transition in terms of food or like how people interact with each other, like when you were moving from Brazil to Portugal?
Yeah, it was definitely a much easier adjustment moving from Brazil to Portugal than from Taiwan to Brazil, because I didn't have to necessarily learn a language again. I was going to another American school. I could speak English fluently. I could get by speaking Portuguese. However, the Portuguese language between Brazil and Portugal are actually quite different. Yes, written-wise, it's pretty much the same, but the accent is so different that I think for Brazilians who go there the first time and hadn't experienced Portugal's Portuguese before, it takes some time to get used to, and you might not understand them in the beginning. So that was something that I had to get used to. There's a sizable Brazilian population in Portugal. So in terms of the food, there was a lot of Brazilian food options in Portugal. And we happened to live close to a shopping center that had a really amazing food court. And there was a place that I think it's called Sopeso, which means, I guess, translate literally would be only the weight, or only by weight, since it's, yeah, by the pound you weigh the food. And I remember going there a lot because, yeah, it's a Brazilian sort of churrascaria, Brazilian style barbecue place. What I loved about Brazil, one of the foods was pão de queijo, which is Brazilian cheese bread. So there's a lot of that in Portugal as well, which, you know, I appreciated. It's gotten a lot more common to see this in the U.S. as well, which is great. Yeah, there's definitely, I would say, it was a much easier transition. But the school itself, I think, was, even though it was an American school still, it was a lot smaller. It was sort of farther away. It was outside of Lisbon. So every day it took me quite a while to get there. I remember I was taking the bus and was on the bus for an hour each way every day, whereas in Brasilia, it was a lot faster. Yeah, it was just overall a very sort of different kind of school environment. It's gets colder in Portugal than in Brasilia. So I remember, everything was mostly indoors, even when it's the summer months. So it's just kind of like these more, I would say, superficial differences. But yeah, it definitely took less of a time to transition than when it was earlier on from Taiwan to Brazil.
There's a Brazilian, well, now it's takeout because it's COVID. But before, you can either do like the buffet style, or they come around, yeah, with the skewers. And it's like really, right, close to my office, so it's delicious. I love the grilled pineapples.
I love it. Yeah, in theory, I would love to be vegetarian. But then there are times like this, if I, say, travel to Brazil, I don't think I could just not eat that.
So I've never been to Portugal, but I imagine Lisbon, in my mind, I'm like, well, Lisbon is probably similar to Madrid in terms of like winter. I mean, we're in winter right now. When I think about winter, I think about the time I was in Spain for Christmas. I was there for 6 months. The entire month of December was very festive. And then you go into January and then there are other additional festivities because they celebrate Three Kings, like Los Reyes Magos, on January 6th.
Yeah.
And so there's just basically like festivals everywhere all the time. I imagine Lisbon might have like similar things like Christmas markets or holiday markets type of stuff. Did you get to experience any of that, or is that basically just a Spain thing?
Yeah, I remember the markets in Portugal were quite nice. The truth is, and this is one of my regrets, is that when I moved around with my parents and living in these countries, again, I was quite young, so I didn't really think much about making the most of learning about the local culture and the language as well. So as an example, in my school in Portugal, I chose to take Portuguese as a foreign language level rather than the native level, even though I, based on my testing results, I could have opted in to take it with the native speakers. I chose not to because I wanted the easy way out. Didn't want to feel sort of shy and uncomfortable. Similar to that is the fact that when you just mentioned about the holidays, to be honest, I can't think of, I guess, a specific Portuguese holiday that is sort of representative of a particular facet of their culture. Because I unfortunately, during my two short years there, I don't think I spent enough time trying to learn more about Portugal. Of course, I went to a lot of places, but yeah, that's one thing I tried to change when I studied abroad in Spain, because studying abroad is sort of very intentional, whereas when I moved around, it was, okay, my parents, my dad's job. So that's something I do regret, but there's so many small towns in Portugal, and that's one of the differences, right, compared to Brazil, is that, yeah, there's so much more history So I remember going to these different small towns on day trips over the weekends. Of course, you know, my parents would make more effort to try to take us or take me to places around the country. So in that sense, yes, I was able to sort of maximize the time there. But as I think I was about 13 to 15 living there, that wasn't really my priority, so to speak. But I think out of all the places I've lived in, it's the probably most beautiful. Again, I lived in Cape Town, but unfortunately, I just don't have as sort of strong of a memory there. But when I lived in Lisbon, I clearly remember the times when I went to Cascais, which is this sort of beachside area. Yeah, I went to the beach a lot because it was about half an hour from where I lived. And it's just like a very sort of beautiful, diverse landscape, and it's not hard to get around. And that was the point in time when I was able to sort of travel around on my own, take trains, to meet up with friends on my own. Whereas in Brasilia, first of all, I wasn't really old enough to do that. And second of all, that wouldn't have been an option. There isn't much of a robust transportation network. And again, like crime is more of a bigger issue in Brazil as a whole than compared to Portugal. So even though I was really sad to leave Brazil at the time, looking back, I'm so glad I got to have those 2 years in Portugal, living in Europe. So it's just a very different experience. Actually, one thing I just remembered when you asked me about sort of differences between Brazil, Portugal, and my experience, I do remember, unfortunately, and I've experienced sort of, as I'm sure all people of color have experienced racism to some degree. I remember we were in this town in Portugal, a smaller town, staying there for the weekend, and there was a man, I think he was a bit drunk, who was walking behind us, my parents and me, and was just shouting, "Oh, like, go back to China," something like that. And that's not the first time. It's happened to my mom in Massachusetts, but I don't recall that ever happening in Brazil. I'm not saying that, their racism does not exist in Brazil, but I think because there's a much, I would say, more prominent, sizable Asian population in Brazil as a whole compared to Portugal, that I think I felt a little more sort of in the public eye than when I was in Brazil.
你在别的国家的时候，人家问你是哪里来，你是怎么回答？
台湾。
然后那你回到台湾住的时候，你还是觉得你是台湾人吗？
我就觉得我是，就是类似像 right, American born Taiwanese，但是我又不是，我是 South African born，但是也要解释，其实我对南非也不是很熟，所以其实就感觉是一个很长的一个要解释的，那我就说，我就是说，哦，我。 在国外住一段时间，那大家都会觉得哦，这是美国吗？或者加拿大？但是我说哦，不是，我看是谁啦，我想不想要就是多加解释。但是对我是自己觉得我跟就是在台湾土生土长的，是，对，是不一样，所以感觉有时候会沟通啊，或者是。 要认识朋友，我就觉得会比较困难一点。如果他们没有在国外住一段时间的话，所以你高中的时候就回台湾，那你那时候知道你要到国外去上大学吗？应该吧，我知道我是11年级，所以那时候是高二，就是真正开始做很多研究，要去哪里念大学。之前我想我应该已经有想到说 ，OK， 我应该是在国外念书，因为我哥哥姐姐都是在美国念大学和研究所。 所以那时候已经在美国了，他比我大很多，所以我其实住在巴西的时候，他们就已经去美国念大学。那时候我在巴西圣保罗的时候，那时候还很小。那对，所以我念大学的是，我其实除了美国也有申请英国，大部分我的同学都是要去美国念书，因为我们新竹实验中学双语部其实大部分人。 他们都是 ABC 或者是类似跟我一样，就是在国外住了一段时间，
所以这个不是台湾的公立学校，
对，有点不太一样，觉得有点难解释，因为不是美国学校。 不是私立的，新竹县居然也是公立的，但是双语我不知道现在有没有变了，因为我2009年毕业，所以已经一段时间了，但是我知道那时候唯一可以去那边念书的是你的爸妈需要在新竹科学园区工作，然后或者是你的爸妈其中一个之前或者现在是替政府工作，所以我爸爸就是替政府工作，外交部，所以我是可以申请进去，不过不是任何人想要去念就可以去念的，对，不然想大家都会想申请去念，因为其实我们付的学费没有像去像美国学校或者是那欧洲台北欧洲学校会那么高，是公立，但是其实我们的课，我们大部分课都是英文的，都是国外请的老师来教，所以其实大致上来讲，我想程度上跟美国学校我们上的课都是类似的，但是我们对啊，我们付的钱不一样，当然新竹也不一样啦，我不知道现在有没有改，但是比较不太一样的一个 structure。
所以你那时候已经决定要到外国读书，申请美国跟英国的大学，那你那时候知道你想要读什么吗？还是你没有说想说要当外交官，或是你自己有别的想法？
对，以前很多人常问我，就是哦，你想要当外交官吗？就是 sort of follow your father's footsteps。 其实我对国际关系很有兴趣，我想就是也是跟我长大做跟那么多国家接触，然后语言和文化接触的 result， 但是因为我了解当台湾外交官是多么的困难，我觉得当外交官是很辛苦，不管你是当哪里国，但是我觉得当台湾是就更辛苦，因为就是反正政治关系就是很难，所以我了解。那我就是unfortunately， 我觉得我不想要做台湾外交官，其实也不想要做任何国家外交官。但是呢，我其实大学是念国际关系，我那时候就已经对国际关系蛮有兴趣的。然后我在高中就是有参加一些模拟联合国会议，其实我在葡萄牙就有开始了，然后在台湾也有参加，有点kind of contradictory, right? Like, 因为台湾不在联合国，但是我觉得我还蛮喜欢那感觉，所以我去华府念书是对念国际关系，然后那个学校也是国际关系，就是蛮有名的。
So, what are you doing now? Are you working at the UN in New York?
No, I mean, I don't think I can, unless I were to enter as a South African citizen or register.Because I'm currently here in the U.S. as a Taiwanese citizen. Yeah, I don't think, because Taiwan's not in the U.N. But actually, it was one of sort of my target organization when I didn't know as much back in the days. But I've been working in the private sector for a while now. I started out, actually, interestingly enough, at a language services provider. It's a translation company called TransPerfect. And I remember I had applied to, you know, a few different translation related roles after I graduated from college. It was just something that I'm interested in, of course, because of my exposure to different languages. I was curious about language translation itself, but also sort of other functions surrounding that and how exactly it worked. So, yeah, I started as a project manager at TransPerfect, and this was in New York, and that's sort of what brought me to New York. A couple months after I graduated from college, and I was there for quite a while. I transitioned into sort of a vendor management role later, where I oversaw contracting, purchasing, and just relationship management of the translators that provided the translation service for us. And I actually recently earlier switched jobs to a information services firm, actually nothing related to language services, but my role is still overseeing language services related contractors and providers and ensuring that our client services are met if they do have a language service need, even though it's not our core service. So yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how things, in a way, I think just on paper, it's all connected because of obviously my interest in languages. Yeah, it's a very niche industry that people don't often think about, but it's sort of everywhere because if you go to a website, oftentimes it's going to be in different languages. And for, I would say, larger companies, you don't necessarily want to manage that on your own. I mean, for smaller companies as well. So then there are other companies that essentially would facilitate that.
Earlier, you said that you went to Spain and then you went back to Taiwan as an adult, both to either do school or work, but it was almost like an elective. But do you want to talk a little bit about how you made those decisions or like what you took out of those experiences?
Yeah, so with Spain, I knew I wanted to spend actually a full year abroad because I knew how short one semester would be and it probably wouldn't allow me to attain that language skills that I wanted. I was actually, remember, choosing between Chile and Spain. I ultimately went with Spain. Specifically, actually, that city that I chose, it's called Salamanca. They're definitely known for their jamón serrano. Well, when I first heard of it and learned about it, it wasn't, you know, that aspect that caught me. Although when I went there, you know, the jamón is so good. The food there is amazing. I honestly can't contest that. Yeah, what caught my eye about Salamanca is that it's known for its centuries-old university. And
the aqueduct, right? Is that the same location?
No, that's a different one. I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of that place.
I'm getting all my cities mixed up. Okay. Sorry.
No worries. I remember I went to another town known for the aqueduct when I was there. But yeah, Salamanca is known for its university and having a very vibrant university life in a small town, which I really want to experience because I had lived in, I'd say, big cities all throughout my life up until then. I mean, at least sizable cities. And for example, George Washington University doesn't necessarily have an enclosed campus. It's within a city. It's not as hectic as probably, say, NYU would be. But again, I wanted to have a very different experience. And I know from my research, Salamanca would provide me with that kind of like a college town life, but in a very, very old place. And so that's why I chose there. And I was very fortunate to have been paired with an amazing, amazing host family. I know that not necessarily everyone had the most amazing experience with their host family. I think it's usually neutral, but with mine, I was very lucky. My host mom, first of all, was an amazing cook and also taught us, although I don't think, unfortunately, I've retained the lessons of, for example, making tortilla española. There was another food called cocido that I really liked. We would have lunch together every day. I actually had another roommate as well who was also in the study abroad program from a different university. And we were just one big family. It was them and two little boys at the time. They were about 10 and 13, and I was 19 or 20 then. I don't have younger siblings, so I saw them as my little brothers. And we would be talking, obviously, in Spanish all the time. And I just learned a lot from them, learned Spanish jokes, learned about Spanish pop culture. And that was the kind of experience that I really forced myself to sort of immerse myself in. Because, like I mentioned previously, in Brazil and Portugal, I was, in a way, too young to grasp how lucky I was to be able to live in these countries and to have the experience of learning about the local culture. And frankly speaking, I probably learned more about American culture living there than Brazil Portuguese because I was studying at American schools and that's where I was, you know, almost all day, every day. So that's something, again, I, in a way, regretted and tried to sort of reverse when I was in Spain, and I'm really happy with everything that I was able to do in Spain and the level of Spanish that I had there, which unfortunately has also gone down since. But I took all my classes in Spanish, which obviously wasn't the case in American schools, and really just had a phenomenal time. I think the fact that, yeah, again, I could choose the kind of experience I wanted to have rather than before when, well, I was also just too young to really know better. But, you know, I did make a decision to not take Portuguese class with the native speakers when I could have and probably could have gotten much better. But, you know, that's something that as a kid, you're not as aware of.
Do you want to do either a quick intro in Spanish or a quick closing in Spanish? Probably an intro in Spanish, and then we can close in Chinese.
Okay, yeah. Hola, me llamo Grace. Soy de Taiwán, mas he vivido en muchos países por todo el mundo. Y viví en España un año también, en Salamanca, que me encanta. Es una ciudad tan hermosa. Y espero que pueda seguir hablando y practicando mi español. I also know you asked about Taiwan, which I know I didn't talk about earlier. So moving back to Taiwan as an adult, that is actually not something I chose. I couldn't stay in the U.S. after my first year of working here. So I was on a student visa, and my company had actually chose to sponsor for my work visa. But maybe you know that with the work visa, there's a lottery system. This is the H-1B visa. And so I didn't get in the lottery and I had to leave. And fortunately, I mean, it's sort of all like stars aligned. My company was opening an office in Taipei, a sales office, although I was not sales. That was something that was just already in the works. And they'd given me opportunity to work from the office there. So sort of remotely, but from its really, really tiny office with one other person. So in the beginning, of course, I was, you know, very sad to have to leave New York after only 1 year, which was kind of a honeymoon period. But again, looking back, I think it was a blessing in disguise to have been able to experience Taipei as an adult, which I actually hadn't lived in Taipei since I was in elementary school. Previously for high school, I was in Hsinchu. And I worked in Taipei 101, which was also an amazing experience. Was able to spend more time with my parents and also made some friends while I was there. So I think that period of time made me feel more grateful and connected to Taiwan as a country and as a culture than ever before, actually.
Oh, it's so cool. Oh my gosh. You're so young and have already lived such a full global citizen experience, I would say. Well, do you want to do any last pieces of advice or commentaries that you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing to take away is if you have the opportunity to live somewhere else or just have a different kind of experience, even if it's in the same place, just to seize it. I didn't necessarily go into this previously, but there have been times in life where I was sort of too scared to make a choice that would mean that if it were to go wrong, it could end up being something that, okay, I wouldn't want. Or, you know, for example, I really want to stay here, but I would have an opportunity to go somewhere else, to start anew, even though I think a lot of people at my age are sort of settling down and you know, getting married. But I think ultimately there's going to be time to do that, but there's not really always going to be time to have a very different sort of life-changing and self-enriching experience. And oftentimes that's done by, yeah, going outside of your comfort zone, and especially if it's in a different place, to just go for it.
Oh my gosh, such a pleasure to talk with you. We can officially close. So Grace, 谢谢你今天来跟我们讲你多么的, how do you say adventures?
冒险,但是其实不是...
冒险 almost is like a risky, that's like a negative connotation, right?
Yeah. 经历, well, that's experience. 经验, 体验.
Oh, I always have trouble
with
Chinese.
You can see how bad my Chinese is.
I feel like you need to give yourself more credit. Your language skills are like amazing.
But you never lived in Taiwan, right?
No, I grew up here.
Yeah, so the fact that like, your Chinese is pretty fluent for someone who never lived there.
Yeah, but it's always like the caveat, right? It's always like, oh, you're pretty good for an ABC.
Well, I think context is important.
Yeah. Let's try this again. Grace, 很感谢你今天来给我们讲你在 各个国家做的这些经验，希望你 I don't know 下一步good luck on your next steps.
Yeah, 谢谢。对啊，我中文也不是很好，我在想 good luck on your next step， 不知道祝你下一步幸运，不是幸运，祝你下一步好运。但我也很感谢有这个机会可以在你的 podcast 上分享我的经历，也希望别的听众有学到一些东西，或者是让他们有点类似就是大开眼界那样子，然后想要多加体验别的文化 和国家。
对啊，我们刚开始的时候你说你想要做一个 podcast， so 我鼓励你开始，然后我们就可以大家一起捧场。
对啊， 很感谢你。Actually, I'm curious again, like how you decided to start this and I guess how long it took for you to start and yeah, maintain this.
Yeah, basically everybody who I talk to for the podcast, they're always like, tell me about your story. And I feel like at some point, I keep saying I'm going to make a podcast episode about it, but yeah. Some of it's a little personal and I'm like not ready to do it yet.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you like individually.
All right, I'm going to cut in here really quick. This is Cynthia editing. Grace and I talked offline for a bit, and I'm just going to keep enough in here so the conversation makes sense for you guys.
I think a lot about like identity. Somehow I think there's a theme, like when you hit your 30s, maybe you start thinking about it more. Or it's like the pattern with the guests, I guess, I've had. I started it because I was feeling very whitewashed by the guy I was engaged to. And so I had started the podcast probably like 6 months before breaking up as kind of like a coping mechanism, I guess.
Yeah. To heal.
Yeah, so it's part of that. And then it kind of took on this like other form where like I wanted to get 长辈的故事, but I think most of the people I'm interviewing now are in their late 20s to mid late 30s.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's how it started. But I want to not have the really bad engagement part be the genesis of it. So I'm like waiting for a while for that to be like a smaller influence, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's the story.
Honestly, oftentimes something really good comes out of, you know, something bad or negative.
For sure.
And actually what you were mentioning about sort of pushing away like the Asian identity or yourself or just like not associating with like Asian, other Asian students. I've definitely, it's happened to me. Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I don't know, somehow it's also later on, like during my 20s, I'm 29, and that I've become more proud of being Taiwanese.
Yeah.
I recently, I don't know if you listened to this podcast episode on Modern Love, the New York Times column, but they, you know, they have the podcast version a couple episodes back. Definitely, yeah, I'd recommend listening to it. It's about this Asian couple, and the piece was originally written by the man, and it was about their first date. It's an Asian American couple. Actually, the guy's parents are immigrated from mainland China, and then the girl's is actually from Taiwan. So the main premise of the story was that how race played a factor, and it was this Asian American, this Taiwanese American girl telling the guy at the end of their first date, this like marathon 9-hour first date, that she's never dated an Asian guy before, and that this might be an issue, and just like how he interpreted that, and then how that became a non-issue because they're now married.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Yeah. So it's very interesting, but it's similar in the sense that, you know, this girl, she grew up in Texas and was kind of shutting the Asian side partly because the way she was raised was that, okay, you want to try to blend in. Whereas with the guy, with his parents, apparently, you know, they had told him to be proud of your heritage, be proud to be different. And so they, even though are both Chinese or Taiwanese American, had very sort of different feelings with their identity growing up, and this essay talks about it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's always tough, like when it comes to issues of race and how that impacts your identity, and like in a mixed race relationship. I don't think it's not an issue, even if the story sort of highlights that they're both Asian American, but they still had to grapple with the issue of race.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially in this day and age.
Such a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed talking with you as well. And it's obviously, I'm sorry that, you know, didn't work out with this guy, but I'm so I'm glad that like part of it contributed to you making this podcast. And I happened to come across it randomly again. It was like I was searching for like Taiwanese related. Again, this is something I just want to sort of feel more connected to it. And this was one of the episodes or one of the podcasts that came up. And I just started listening to it randomly. So
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, really thankful that you kept this up.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. It's very sporadic, but I keep telling myself I'm going to try to do more and try to not be so edit heavy on it. It's like cutting out the ums or cutting out my questions because I oftentimes get like, I talk too fast and ask questions that have like a hanging question that's like not a statement, and I get like very self-conscious about it.
Did you do any kind of sound editing before this, or you just sort of
I know nothing about like audio productions, but it's been fun.
Yeah,
so please do yours so then we'll have more stuff to listen to.
Yeah, no, I hope to get this up and running.
There are some ones that I found in the last year or two that I've loved. So I've talked about Susie's podcast, bilingual. I found one called Esta Paraha, Taiwa Fuchi.
The Guatemalan Taiwanese company. Yeah, I've listened to that.
I think they're so cute.
Yeah.
It'd be great to have more. Like, I want to listen to something with Taiwan Guoyu Chang.
Yeah. Again, I don't have like a title set, but I was trying to decide whether to include some like Taiwan or Taiwanese in the title, but I don't think I will. Because I think a lot of the things that I talk about probably won't have anything to do with Taiwan, and sort of envisioning it as, again, starting out as more of like a diary format where it's just me talking. Yeah. And then once I get a little more comfortable, I'll start interviewing my friends because I know a lot of crazy, interesting people as well. I feel like, oh, I don't really know, you know, how to ask the right questions or things like that are holding me up, kind of like imposter syndrome. But
the first one's definitely the hardest. I'm happy to be your like extra pep talk person.
My gosh. Yeah, no, thank you. I need to do some more just decisions about, okay, this is definitely my first episode and like kind of like the summary about the podcast title. But yeah, no, I really appreciate your offering to help.
Okay, I'll let you go. Thanks for spending another 20 minutes with me.
Yeah, no worries. This has been great. And yeah, I hope to stay in touch.
Well, if you come up to Boston, let me know.
I traveled to Boston for Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
My sister lives there. Yeah, so I took the Amtrak. And
yeah, I also love taking Amtrak. I did it last year when I broke my ankle. And it's so much more of a comfortable experience than taking the plane.
It's like more people than I would like, but it's not that bad because with the two seats, it's always going to be only one person.
Yeah.
So there might be someone else in your row, but they're in the other like two-seater. And it felt very clean and safe. I'll definitely keep you posted. Yes. Once I make some more progress with my podcast project.
That sounds lovely. Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Grace. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Good luck in New York.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Remember to check out Grace's new podcast called Stories from a Nomadic Citizen.
And that's it for today. Please send me a message on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at TWDIASPORA or shoot me an email. It's hello@TaiwaneseDiaspora.com. And if you or other people you know have stories that they'd like to share on this podcast, please send them my way as well.
Some of you have asked about how to support the show. So if you are inclined, go to ko-fi.com/TWDIASPORA to donate. And if you like to read, check out my book recommendations at bookshop.org/shop/TWDIASPORA. And 10% of the proceeds will come back to support the show.
All right, see you next time.